Songs of Robin Hood by James Leigh Hunt, 1820, read by Alexander Wilson. Robin Hood, a child. It was the pleasant season yet, when the stones at cottage doors dry quickly, while the roads are wet after the silver showers. The green leaves, they looked greener still, and the thrush, renewing his tune, shook a loud note from his gladsome bill into the bright blue noon. Robin Hood's mother looked out and said, "It were a shame and a sin for fear of getting a wet head to keep such a day within, nor welcome up from his sickly bed your Uncle Gamelin." And Robin leaped and thought so too, and so he has grasped her gown, and now, looking back, they have lost the view of merry sweet Locksley Town. Robin was a gentle boy, and therewithal is bold to say he was his mother's joy, it were a phrase too cold. His hair upon his thoughtful brow came smoothly clipped and sleek, but ran into a curl somehow beside his merrier cheek. Great love to him his uncle too, the noble Gamelin bare, and often said as his mother knew that he should be his heir. Gamelin's eyes, now getting dim, would twinkle at his sight, and his ruddy wrinkles laugh at him between his locks so white. For Robin already let him see he should beat his playmates all at wrestling, running, and archery, yet he cared not for a fall. Merriest he was of merry boys, and would set the old helmets bobbing. If his uncle asked about the noise, 'twas, "If you please, Sir Robin." And yet if the old man wished no noise, he'd come and sit at his knee, and be the gravest of grave-eyed boys, and not a word spoke he. So whenever he and his mother came to brave old Gamelin Hall, 'twas nothing there but sport and game, and holiday folks all. The servants never were to blame, though they let the physic fall. And now the travellers turn the road, and now they hear the rooks, and there it is, the old abode, with all its hearty looks. Robin laughed, and the lady too, and they looked at one another. Says Robin, "I'll knock as I'm used to do at uncle's window, mother." And so he picked up some pebbles and ran, and jumping higher and higher, he reached the windows with a tan-a-ran-tat, and instead of the kind old white-haired man, there looked out a fat friar. "How now?" said the fat friar angrily. "What is this knocking so wild?" But when he saw young Robin's eye, he said, "Go around, my child. Go around to the hall, and I'll tell you all." "He'll tell us all," thought Robin. And his mother and he went quietly, though her heart was set a-throbbing. The friar stood in the inner door and tenderly said, "I fear you know not the good squires no more, even Gamelin de Vere. Gamelin de Vere is dead. He changed but yesternight. Now make us way," the lady said, "to see that doleful sight. Good Gamelin de Vere is dead, and has made us his holy heirs." The lady stayed not for all he said, but went weeping up the stairs. Robin and she went hand in hand, weeping all the way, until they came where the lord of that land dumb in his cold bed lay. His hand she took and saw his dead look, with the lids over each eyeball, and Robin and she wept as plenteously as though he had left them all. "I will return, Sir Abbot of Vere, I will return as is meet, and see my honored brother dear laid in his winding sheet, and I will stay, for to go were a sin for all a woman's tears, and see the noble Gamelin laid low with the De Veres." The lady went with a sick heart out into the kind fresh air, and told her Robin all about the abbot whom he saw there, and how his uncle must have been disturbed in his failing sense to leave his wealth to these artful men at hers and Robin's expense. Sad was the stately day for all but the Vere Abbey friars, when the coffin was stripped of its hiding-pall amidst the hushing choirs. Sad was the earth dropping dust to dust, and "Our brother here departed." The lady shook at them, as shake we must, and Robin, he felt strange-hearted. That self-same evening, nevertheless, they returned to Locksley Town, the lady in a dumb distress, and Robin looking down. They went and went, and Robin took long steps by his mother's side, till she asked him, with a sweet, sad look, what made him so thoughtful-eyed. "I was thinking, mother," said little Robin, with his own voice so true he spoke right out, "that if I was a king, I'd see what those friars do." His mother stooped with a tear of joy, and she kissed him again and again, and said, "My own little Robin boy, thou wilt be a king of men." Robin Hood's Flight. Robin Hood's mother, these 12 years now, has been gone from her earthly home, and Robin has paid, he scarcely knew how, a sum for a noble tomb. The churchyard lies on a woody hill, but open to sun and air, it seems as if the heaven still were looking and smiling there. Often, when Robin looked that way, he looked through a sweet, thin tear, but he looked in a different manner, they say, towards the Abbey of Vere. He cared not for its ill-gotten wealth. He felt not for his pride. He had youth and strength and health, and enough for one beside. But he thought of his gentle mother's cheek, how it sunk away, and how she used to grow more weak and weary every day, and how, when trying a hymn, her voice at evening would expire, how unlike it was the arrogant noise of the hard throats of the choir. And Robin thought, too, of the poor, how they toiled without their share, and how the alms at the abbey door but kept them as they were. And he thought then of the friars again, who rode jingling up and down with their trappings and things as fine as the king's, though they wore but a shaven crown. And then, bold Robin, he thought of the king, how he got all his forests and deer, and how he made the hungry swing if they killed but one in a year. And thinking thus, as Robin stood, digging his bow in the ground, he was aware in Gamelyn Wood of one who looked around. "And what is Will doing?" said Robin then, "that he looks so fearful and wan? O, my dear master, that should have been, I am a weary man." "A weary man," said Will Scarlet, "am I, for unless I pilfer this wood to sell to the Fletchers for want, I shall die here in this forest so good. Here in this forest where I have been so happy and so stout, and like a palfrey on the green have carried you about. And why will Scarlet not come to me? Why not to Robin, Will? For I remember thy love and thy glee and the scar that marks thee still. And not a soul of my uncle's men to such a pass should come, while Robin can find in his pocket or bin a penny or a crumb. Stay thee, Will Scarlet man, stay a while and kindle a fire for me." And into the wood for half a mile he has vanished instantly. Robin Hood, with his cheek on fire, has drawn his bow so stern, and a leaping deer with one leap higher lies motionless in the fern. Robin, like a proper knight, as he should have been, carved a part of the shoulder right, and bore off a portion clean. "Oh, what hast thou done, dear master mine? What hast thou done for me?" "Roast it, Will, for accepting wine thou shalt feast thee royally." And Scarlet took and half-roasted it, blubbering with blind tears, and ere he had eaten a second bit, a trampling came to their ears. They heard the tramp of a horse's feet, and they listened and kept still, for Will was feeble and knelt by the meat, and Robin, he stood by Will. "Seize him! Seize him!" the abbot cried, with his fat voice through the trees. Robin, a smooth arrow felt and eyed, and Will jumped stout with his knees. "Seize him! Seize him!" And now they appear, the abbot and foresters three. "'Twas I," cried Will Scarlet, "that killed the deer." Says Robin, "Now let not a man come near, or he's dead as dead can be." But on they came, and with an embrace the first one the arrow met, and he came pitching forward and fell on his face like a stumbler in the street. The others turned to that abbot vain, but "Seize him!" still he cried, and as the second turned again, an arrow was in his side. "Seize him! Seize him still, I say!" cried the abbot in furious chafe, "or these dogs will grow so bold some day, even priests will not be safe." A fatal word, for as he sat, urging the sword to cut, an arrow stuck in his paunch so fat as in a leathern butt, as in a leathern butt of wine, or dough, or household lump, or a pumpkin, or a good beef chine stuck that arrow with a dump. "Truly," said Robin without fear, smiling as he stood, "never was slain so fat a deer in good old Gamelyn Wood." "Pardon, pardon, Sir Robin Stout," said he that stood apart. "As soon as I knew thee, I wished thee out of the forest with all my heart, and I pray thee let me follow thee anywhere under the sky, for thou wilt never stay here with me, nor without thee can I." Robin smiled, and suddenly fell into a little thought, and then into a leafy dell the three slain men they brought. Ankle-deep in leaves so red which autumn there had cast, when going to her winter bed she had undressed her last. And there in a hollow, side by side, they buried them under the treen. The abbot's belly, for all its pride, may not the grave be seen. Robin Hood, and the forester, and Scarlet the Goodwill, struck off among the green trees there, up a pathless hill, and Robin caught a sudden sight of merry sweet Locksley Town, reddening in the sunset bright, and the gentle tears came down. Robin looked at the town and land in the churchyard where it lay, and poor Will Scarlet kissed his hand and turned his head away. Then Robin turned with a grasp of Will's and clapped him on the shoulder, and said with one of his pleasant smiles, "Now show us three men bolder." And so they took their march away, as firm as if to fiddle, to journey that night and all next day with Robin Hood in the middle. Robin Hood, an outlaw. Robin Hood is an outlaw bold under the greenwood tree. Bird nor stag nor morning air is more at large than he. They sent against him 20 men who joined him laughing-eyed. They sent against him 30 more, and they remained beside. All the stoutest of the train that grew in Gamelyn Wood, whether they came with these or not, are now with Robin Hood. And not a soul in Locksley Town would speak him an ill word. The friars raged, but no man's tongue nor even feature stirred, except among a very few who dined in the abbey halls. And then with a sigh bold Robin knew his true friends from his false. There was Roger the monk that used to make all monkery his glee, and Midge, on whom Robin had never turned his face but tenderly. With one or two they say besides, Lord, that in this life's stream men should abandon one true thing that would abide with them. We cannot bid our strength remain, our cheeks continue round. We cannot say to an aged back, stoop not toward the ground. We cannot bid our dim eyes see things as bright as ever, nor tell our friends, though friends from youth, that they'll forsake us never. But we can say, I never will friendship fall off from thee. And oh, sound truth and old regard, nothing shall part us three. This recording was produced by Telltale Weekly.